The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Many people use e-scooters safely for legitimate purposes, for example, commuting to work or to college or to sport. But what happens if you hit a pothole or a drain and you come a cropper?
Physics of these machines are that basically when you hit an obstruction, you immediately become a projectile at 20 to 30 kilometres an hour, whatever the speed that you're going at. And that is resulting in the severe injuries. So 100% intracranial bleeds. Half of them had brain contusions. Half of them required emergency neurosurgery. And that's just the brain injuries. You then have other injuries such as injuries to the face. So, you know, you can have very complex injuries to the face, requiring surgery, and leaving them with long-term disability, leaving them with nerve damage and disfigurement. And then you have all of the other, you know, in the context of this, the more minor injuries, but certainly not minor in our view, of fractures, abrasions, lacerations, concussions without necessarily getting full-on intracranial bleeds. So these are very significant situations.
So that was Thurlough Bulger, consultant in paediatric emergency medicine, clinical director at Children's Health Ireland, speaking to News Talk earlier this week. What we want to talk about today is the use and abuse of e-scooters, because on Monday, the relevant ministers are all going to be meeting and proposals will be put before them as to what to do, whether to ban them outright, whether to control them, to regulate them, and how to police them, all of these thorny problems. And we thought we might look at how other jurisdictions handle the problems, whether or not they have open season on e-scooters or whether or not they ban them entirely. Just looking at our nearest neighbour, in London, there are some trials on rental scooters, but they're only trials. And if they don't work out, what happens to private scooters will happen to the rental scooters. They will be banned entirely. Private e-scooters remain 100% illegal on public roads and paths. That's in the UK. Here, as you know, they are allowed by law as rentals, but they have no schemes yet because there's some controversy about weight limits. Riding on the sidewalk or footpath riding is completely banned here. There's a speed limit of 20 kilometres per hour. There's a weight limit ceiling of 25 kilograms, and you cannot take your e-scooter on public transport. So you can't take it on the bus, you can't take it on the train, the Dart or whatever. This is for fear of battery fires and so on. But whether that is observed is another question entirely. Now, we heard a lot about Paris and e-scooters, so we'll go to Elaine Cobb, first of all, Paris-based journalist, to hear about the experience there. Elaine, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we heard about the ban on rental schemes, but you still see e-scooters around Paris.
Yes, Paris was a pioneer of scooters, especially scooters for hire. But the infuriated motorists, cyclists and pedestrians, as the users frequently ignored the rules on where to ride and park them. So in 2023, e-scooters for hire were banned across the French capital. You can still ride your own bike, but there are far more regulations in place now. In fact, across France, the minimum age is 14 years. The speed is limited to 25 kilometers an hour, no driving on footpaths, only one passenger, and mandatory equipment like front and rear lights, reflectors, etc. And then each city is allowed to bring in other rules.
Now, what about helmets? Are they required of all riders of e-scooters?
Helmets are required of minors. So if you are older, they are simply recommended, but they're strongly recommended by many. But in fact, it's only if you're a minor that you have to wear them.
Now, the question of insurance and registration, I mean, do they know with these private scooters, which are still permitted in Paris, do they know who owns them and do they have to carry insurance?
They all have to be insured. And that is something that was very close to the heart of the City Hall when they were bringing in the rules after a citywide referendum, which voted overwhelmingly against the e-scooters, especially for hire. And the idea is that they say that if you've had to buy one, pay for the insurance, work out where you can park and charge it, the chances are you're more responsible. So they're happier with that. Now, in Paris, they voted to ban all scooters for hire, but the speed limit of 25 kilometres continues. In Bordeaux, however, in the southwest, they decided to limit the speed in much of the city to 10 kilometres an hour. And there are specific areas where you can park these e-scooters, whether they're hired or whether they're private.
Have any of them tried geo-blocking, where they can actually control the hired scooters in the same way anyone who's used maybe a modern golf cart will know that you, if you approach the greens, for example, in a golf cart, the geo-blocking will stop the buggy in its tracks and it can't proceed because it's going on a prohibited space. That's using sat-nav technology. Have any of them in France generally tried this kind of tactic to make sure that scooters obey the speed limits?
Well, the speed limit issue is controlled, in fact, for e-scooters for hire by demanding that all the companies have to regulate the scooter engine so it cannot go above 25 kilometres. The question of geo-blocking came up, but there were a lot of concerns that if that happened in somewhere as busy as Paris, that you could end up with more people getting hurt as scooters were just stopped dead in their tracks. So for the moment, it's very much the engines being blocked and also fines. And in Lyon, for example, where they have the speed limit of 25 kilometres, this week they stepped up police controls because there were urban rodeos, as they put it themselves, in some of the suburbs where the kids were just flying along the roads.
OK, so there's been a side effect, I believe. I've been reading this. I don't know how true it is, because often here you get the people who are in favour of this kind of mobility saying this is active travel. Well, standing on a scooter is not active travel. It's standing. That's all you're doing. But in Paris, I believe, since the ban, lots more people are actually actively travelling on bicycles. In other words, using their legs and their lungs.
Exactly. There's been a huge uptick in people cycling, and especially tourists who would have hopped on a bike, on an e-scooter, sorry. They are now on bicycles, whether they're electric or normal, but you still have to do a certain amount of cycling, even on the e-bikes here. And that was something that came in fact, when they were discussing the whole ban. And they said, seriously, if you're making room on all these cycle lanes that people are paying for on the basis that we want Parisians to be more active, then why are we giving space to e-scooters where nobody's active? So there was a big push for the bicycles. And in fact, some of the companies doing e-scooters for hire also have bicycles for hire. So they just simply upped their marketing of the bicycles. And there's been a huge jump in that.
All right, Elaine, thank you very much for that update from Paris and beyond. Looking at other countries, in Germany, they integrate scooters directly into federal law traffic under the Small Electric Vehicles Ordinance. The speed limit aligns with the Dublin speed limit, which is 20 kilometres per hour. They allow riders as young as 14, but e-scooters have to have a dedicated type approval certificate. They have to have a specific insurance sticker plate and dual independent brakes if they want to go near a public road. But right throughout Germany, because it's a federal country, the individual states may have different systems. We'll go to Scandinavia now, because the Scandinavian models are always given as great examples in education, in childcare, in healthcare and all the rest of it. So Philip O'Connor is a freelance journalist living and working in Stockholm, but he's been casting an eye over things generally in Scandinavia. Philip, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Talk to me about e-scooters in Scandinavia.
Oh, I would have to say I'd be an e-scooter user myself. I may be using one when I go into the record store later today. They appeared here probably about 10 years ago on the streets of Stockholm, where I live, and they quickly spread to other parts of the Nordic region, to Copenhagen, to Oslo in Norway. And like many other cities, they sort of appeared out of nowhere and flourished, and all the problems that came with it immediately became apparent. We had problems with accidents, we had problems with parking, with e-scooters dumped by people being out, you know, outside apartment doors. They've been out for a few drinks the night before and just left there. So over the years, they've come up with different kinds of legislation. The most recent law that was passed here in Stockholm, it reduced the number of operators, so the private hire operators, from 3 to 2, because basically they want to deal with less people when it comes to private hire. So in pretty much across the board in Scandinavia, Pat, the speed limit is 20 kilometers an hour. There are various limitations when it comes to helmets. Helmets are mandatory for kids under 15 in Sweden and Norway, but they're mandatory for all users in Denmark, which is interesting because Denmark, being the most southern of the Scandinavian countries, it's very much a bicycle dependent, particularly in Copenhagen, where I know you've been. It's very much a bicycle dependent city and people are ready for those kinds of things. So, and again, I suppose the last thing is the difference between the public and the private hire. The e-scooters that I use are the ones that you scan with your phone, you jump up, you take your 10 or 12 minute ride to the next place you're going. But there are also people who use them every day to get, you know, to and from work and to and from college and that kind of thing. But they are also banned now, going back a couple of years, on public transport. But the reason given for that is, of course, you know, the possibility that the lithium batteries might go on fire. I don't think I've ever heard of a case of that happening. I think they're just too bulky. And they also don't want people riding them in stations, in train stations and bus stations.
Now, what sort of equipment are you required to have in Sweden?
So basically nothing. I mean, as long as you're over 15, you don't need a helmet, you don't need anything.
You have to have a bell. For example, the number of people who whiz by and they've no way of warning you that they're approaching because the electric motor is relatively silent. So do you have to have a bell on your scooter, as it were? Do you have to have lights? Indeed, do you have to have reflectors?
Indeed you do. Yeah, you need to have it. The recommendation is that you wear a reflective vest. You have to have lights forward and backward facing. You have to have brakes. You have to have a bell or some sort of sound that you can give to warn other people that you're coming. There's also a limitation on the amount of power that the battery can produce. So the limit on that in Sweden is 250 watts. That's the absolute maximum. And the reason for that then is because they don't want people trimming their electric scooters to go faster than the allowed 20 kilometers an hour. And I heard you speaking to Elaine there about this situation in Paris and geo-blocking and that. And it's absolutely fascinating how that works in Stockholm, because there's sort of two areas where you can't park an electric scooter that's hired from a private operator. One is around the Royal Palace, so the King doesn't want us parking our electric scooters there. And also around the waterfront, so all the quays in Sweden. Stockholm is basically built on an archipelago. You can't stop or park anywhere along there because it basically makes everything look very ugly. And the other thing is that in the sort of central areas of town where I'll be headed now this afternoon, there is a control there. So 20 kilometers an hour is sort of the maximum speed that you can go anywhere. But that goes down in areas where there are a lot of pedestrians to 15 kilometers an hour. Because the big risk, of course, is not really that, you know, you bump into a car or something else like that, that you can only blame yourself for. But it's actually people on e-scooters running into other pedestrians. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be where the most serious incidents take place.
And do they encourage the use of e-scooters on cycle lanes, for example?
Yeah, so you're actually not allowed to go on sort of a walking path or a sidewalk. You're not allowed to use them there anymore. In the beginning, you were. And of course, that led to people on e-scooters running into people, to regular pedestrians. So the rules are now that you can use the cycle lanes and to a certain extent, you can use the roads. Obviously, you can't go out on a motorway on an e-scooter, that, but you will be able to use the road. You know, you have to sort of keep yourself in towards the pavement, but you're absolutely not allowed to go on the pavement. That said, you will see people going on the pavement. But one of the things about Scandinavia, Patty, is, of course, that there's a very well-developed cycle network. I could leave my house now about 12 kilometres north of the city centre, and I have cycle lanes all the way into the city centre where I never need to be on the same road as a car. So that does help in terms of keeping people that little bit safer.
Now, I presume the rental schemes, there's a kind of an insurance built in the tariff that you pay for the use of a scooter. What about if you own your own scooter? Do you have to be insured?
Not necessarily. So it depends on the specifications of the scooter, and the ones that are sort of slightly more powerful. Say if you have a motor that can give you 300 watts rather than 250 watts, then you have to have insurance, but also you can't use it in public the same way as you would the private hire ones. You have to have liability insurance, I think, in Norway. So you have to have a sort of a third party liability insurance if you're running them in Norway, in Oslo or that kind of place as well, you know. Yeah. But for the most part, you don't have to have that. And that's really the grey area. And that's sort of the next step for people here in Sweden is, okay, what do we do? Because there is that dichotomy, the difference between the ones that I will hire now this afternoon and somebody who owns one and uses it every day.
Okay, so how easy would it be? You're 12 kilometers outside the center of Stockholm. I mean, are there loads of places around you where you can pick up an e-scooter?
They are absolutely everywhere. I'm just back from working in Vancouver for a month in Canada, where I was at the World Cup, and it was noticeable. Like, one of the first things I noticed in that city was there's virtually no e-scooters anywhere at all. Whereas here in Stockholm, I'd say probably 5 minutes from my house now, I could find a scooter. And once I get downtown, they're absolutely everywhere. But what's quite interesting about the way the market has developed in time, Pat, is that exactly as Elaine was saying, we're finding that there's more and more electric bicycles being out there that are available now for hire. And it's often the same companies that do the e-scooters who are now providing the electric bicycles. So there's a limit in Stockholm of 12,000 e-scooters that can be available at any one time. And a lot of those companies have now realized that electric bicycles are much safer. They're much easier to use. For most people can ride a bike. And, you know, you're sort of covered by a very, very clear set of laws and that. And also, motorists are used to dealing with cyclists. An awful lot of motorists will complain about them and give out about them, but they're used to the way people behave. What they're not used to is scooters that are zipping in and out of traffic and up onto cycle lanes and then down onto the road and that. And that makes it very difficult for them to predict what's going to happen.
So that's the issue that we're grappling with here in Ireland. Also, I don't know whether you heard that in one relatively short period of about a fortnight, there were 7 kids in intensive care with brain injuries from falling off e-scooters. And that has prompted a more concentrated debate, I think, on the future of e-scooters. So we don't know whether they're going to be banned, whether there's going to be more regulation, what powers the police will need to deal with scooters if they continue. But you're saying that Scandinavia generally is coping?
It's coping, Pat, but I wouldn't say it's a good situation, right? So if we look at the statistics for Sweden for 2025, the number of accidents and the number of people have injured, it actually went up by 38%. There were 6,505 accidents involving people last year where they were injured. In total, 6,624 people were injured in those accidents and 7 people died. So even if they are doing their best to sort of regulate this and to find ways of doing it safely, it still doesn't seem to be working. And I suppose the big challenge that's facing Dublin and Cork and Stockholm and Gothenburg is the fact that how do you police these things? How do you stop them? If you ask people to register them, what does a registration sign? You know, you have your car reg plate on your car when you leave News Talk today. Everybody can see who's driving that car. How do you do that on a smaller vehicle? How do you prove that people have insurance? Do you have checkpoints on bicycle lanes? How do you do all of those things? And I think from what the people I've spoken to the last 24 hours or so, and particularly in Denmark, they're talking about education. The reason that these things work a little bit better in Denmark is because it does have such a strong cycling culture. It does have that collective idea that they actually call it collective traffic. So when you're out there, you have a responsibility, not just to yourself to get there safely, but also to the other people around you, to the cyclists, to the mums and dads pushing prams and to the car drivers and that, that everybody has to work together in order for transport to be safe.
Philip, thank you very much for joining us and filling us in on the situation in Scandinavia. That's Philip O'Connor.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.